I know that St. John's Church has a Facebook page. I know that, and I even know that I have liked it, which is something of a step for me because I am rarely on Facebook. But I am glad we have a Facebook page, and all of you should like it too, because it surprises no one when I like the Facebook page of St. John's, but it might surprise and confound your friends if they saw that you were liking the page of a little church. I would even go so far as to say that out of all of the people here in this room right now, I have been on Facebook the longest. And if you want to know how I make that claim, ask me at coffee hour. But of course, that does not matter, because on Facebook, you are not rewarded for longevity. You are rewarded for popularity. Or even more pointedly, you are rewarded for the frequency of posting things. And on those two scores, I am not doing very well. My social media impact factor is so low as to be undetectable. The plain truth is, I just don't check my Facebook account that much. I probably could come up with a lot of high-minded sounding reasons for that. But the reality is, Facebook has made me learn stuff about my friends that I would really rather not know. Because see, friends, when you are my age, and I'm just going to let you quietly speculate on that, you want to have fond memories of high school. You want to think well of all of the people you knew back then. And that is a lot easier to do when you can't quite remember much about them. But every time I am on Facebook, I have to learn more and more about who those people became. I've learned who became the Blue State Liberals and who became the Red State Conservatives. I've learned who supports gun control and who thinks gun control is a sign of creeping socialism or the first efforts of the British Crown to take us back over. I've learned who thinks Obamacare didn't go far enough and who thinks Obamacare is a sign of the decline of Western civilization, and I don't really want to know any of this. This past week, I found the courage once more to sign on to my Facebook account for perhaps the first time in a month. And I found notification that one of my friends, no one here, had recently joined a group called, and I am not kidding, True Orthodoxy. True Orthodoxy, not just Orthodoxy, True Orthodoxy, apparently to differentiate it from all those other forms of Orthodoxy. Now, I know I'm about to skate on thin ice here because there are people in this room who know a great deal more about the Orthodox tradition than I ever will, but this made me so curious that I had to look it up. And sure enough, there is a website out there in the world called True Orthodoxy, and its purpose is to help all those who have gotten the Christian faith wrong by letting them know that they are wrong. The website helpfully divides the various ways of getting it wrong into big, broad categories. Schismatics, 11 kinds of schismatics, 5 Greeks and 6 Russians, heretics, non-Christians, and other. Oh, and the website also goes on to point out that the idea of a world movement of Orthodox Christians would itself be an apostasy. So I guess that's 5 categories in all. I confess, I had to figure out where they had put us. I figured we wouldn't do better than other. Turns out we got placed with the heretics. The good news is it's a crowded room. There are a lot of heretics, so we will not lack for company. When I read through all of this, I am struck by the basic quest that it expresses. Some of us have a deep need to know the truth. The single, unyielding, unchanging truth. We want to know that there is such a truth. We want to be on the side of that truth. We want to proclaim that truth. And we want to draw a clear line between those who know what the truth is and those who either don't or won't or deny it. Part of what faith is about is the search for truth. God is truth itself. And so it makes sense that to know the truth is to know God. And then there is another part of what the faith is about, equal to and alongside the search for truth. It is the search for tolerance. And it springs from an equally urgent part of our nature. We want to be accepted, and we know we have made mistakes. And so we want to know, when we come to judgment, that some provision will be made for our frailties, for our foibles, for all the things that made it hard for us to get it right. The search for truth and the search for tolerance get into a lot of trouble. They are each necessary for the religious life, but we tend to find ourselves divided in terms of the camps that we prefer. If you value truth above all other things, it can be hard to be tolerant of those who have received a different truth from the one you were given. And if you value tolerance above all other things, it can be hard to get clear about exactly what is the truth that you believe. When St. Paul wrote that letter to the earliest church in Rome, he was writing to a group of people in the very first years of trying to understand what it meant to be a follower of Jesus. There was a lot of disagreement about what just the truth of Christianity was, and a lot more disagreements about what the demands of that truth might be on a follower of Jesus. Did it mean you still had to keep kosher? Did it mean you worshipped on Saturday or Sunday? Did it mean you still had to follow all the Jewish laws? Did it mean you had to refuse to make sacrifices to the gods of the Romans? What did it mean? Paul has some pretty clear advice to the people who find themselves in this argument. He comes down pretty hard on the side of tolerance, if that is not a self-contained contradiction, coming down hard for tolerance. And it turns out that it is not. Paul says that there is not much that will be gained by insisting on your particular version of the faith. His basic contention is not to say that tolerance is more important than truth. It is to say that the whole truth about God is absolutely and without question beyond the grasp of any one of us to know. That does not make tolerance more important than truth, but it does make tolerance essential in any community that claims to be a gathering of truth seekers. I do not need to tell you that our world is well supplied with intolerant truth seekers. Lots of people fit into that category so obviously that they are almost cartoon characters. We call them fundamentalists of one stripe or another. They are, as my old boss used to say, the sort of people who see the world by the light of the rearview mirror. Fundamentalists are not restricted to the life of religion. There are plenty of people who are absolutely certain they are in the possession of the truth, or at least the only legitimate means to find the truth. Some of them, not surprisingly, are atheists. Some of them are scientists. A lot of them are politicians. Now, this is an Episcopal church. For a lot of people, that is a label without a lot of content in it. We get dismissed as the church of the weather vane, the Church of the Wishy-Washy Brethren, the Church of God's Frozen People. You've heard all of them as much as I have. Sometimes those criticisms are right, and they're worth listening to, even when they are not necessarily offered in charity. But when we get it right, we live out the very best of our own nature and our own history when we live in a search for the holy place between truth and tolerance. We are a people of the middle. That can seem like a church of mediocrity or a church of the bland, the mundane, the average, or the neutral. But being who we really are is very hard work. Because to be a church of the middle way means to accept a path that is never easy to find, has few followers, and even fewer leaders. It is to accept the idea that you will be criticized from both sides, by the folks who find you too churchy and too rigid, and by the people who say your idea of the faith is just wrong, incomplete, lacking, or heretical, or just other. We have lots of differences in the business of faith. That is not a sign that only fools have faith. It is a sign of something very wise that the faith tries to teach us. That as much as we have accomplished as a species, we are very, very limited. And we are liable to vastly overestimate our own capacity to find the truth. We actually have a deep theological investment in that idea, one that is more than 300 years old. The first great Anglican theologian, Richard Hooker, argued that God cares a great deal more about the moral status of an individual human soul than about our knowledge or observance of any specific matter of doctrine. A whole school of thought arose to think about that idea, and not surprisingly, they got criticized from both sides. They were seen as people who gave too much latitude for individual belief, and so they were called latitudinarians. Say that 7 times fast after Sherry Hour. Latitudinarians, which today sounds like a kind of organic food. Back then, it was like calling someone a wimp. Well, they may not like it, but that is who we are. We are a people of the middle. We do not find in the differences that separate people of belief matters of such critical importance that they are worth dividing communities or friends or nations or people. We are the great, 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 great grandchildren of people who spent centuries spilling each other's blood over matters of faith, and who finally figured out that it would probably be a lot smarter and a good deal more Christian to find ways of managing to pray together side by side, differences notwithstanding. That is the witness that we have to offer to the world today, and it is urgently, urgently needed. If you find yourself talking to people who look around the world today and think religion is the problem, bring them here and let them see what we mean by it. We need to get this message around. Living the middle way is never easy, but it is the only way that offers hope in our torn and tattered world. And the business of Christians is always and everywhere to offer hope. Amen.